Good evening. We are coming to you live from Lake Andes, South Dakota, and this is the domestic violence programming, and we're talking about the men's re-education program. We're visiting tonight with Richard Milda, who is facilitator for the men's re-education program, and Richard is going to visit with us tonight about tactics that batterers, those who are abusers in a violent relationship, use. So once again, I'd like to introduce Rich. And Richard, thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you, Donna, for having me. Again, it's good to be here. I want to say hello to all the listeners out there in cyberland. It's good to be out there getting this information, and I'm really excited about it, Donna.
Good, because we are getting more and more listeners as we move along in our broadcasting of Dakota Talk Radio, and that's who we are. We are Dakota Talk Radio and Internet Broadcasting. And so, Richard, let's go ahead and get started.
Sure.
Tonight, and let's talk about, first of all, when we're talking about tactics of batterers, what are we talking about?
Well, as we discussed last Thursday, we were talking about what is battering and the purpose for it and the different types of battering that is done in a relationship. And so there's different forms of tactics in a battering relationship, Donna. The thing I want to point out right away, though, is that, and this is a real tough pill to swallow for a lot of us, and that is, it's a choice. It is really a simple choice, you know, to use the tactics we're going to talk about, or the ways to control and get our way, that we can choose to do them or choose not to do them. Okay, and it's so simple that, you know, it's not about having to be in therapy or having to, you know, our own Dakota ways. You know, our Indian ways teach us and tell us how to be, you know, and there's so many teachings, you know, and a lot of us are versed in that. And even if we're not, you know, there are just, you know, good ways to be with one another and not to use these ways or tactics we're going to talk about. But it is a choice whether I do something to get control in a relationship, or do something that's going to be compromising and working it out, you know, with good communication. Mm-hmm. But I think with that simple choice being mentioned leads me right into the fact that we live in a male-dominant society. America is male privilege. And what I always tell the men and people who I talk to when I'm getting this point across, all we need to do is go into an elementary school, a junior high school, where if there's a calendar that has the leaders of this country, we're going to see nothing but white male leaders.
And they usually have those all along the board.
Oh, yeah.
Or the walls, at the top of the walls. Yeah.
Sure. It's, you know, it's profound, and we're taught that. Not that people of color and women have challenged that system or that privilege, and it should be continued to, but that's what we have in place, and that is fact. And so that is the first, and using that male privilege is at the top of a tactic that we use. And, you know, my awakening, and this is even when I was sober, you know, being clean and sober, where I really started to be able to examine my behavior and the changes that I'm going in through and making. For example, male privilege. We pull up to a powwow, and we're all getting ready to dance, and whether we're doing that real slow or taking our time, depending how late we are, or, you know, all that stuff. And we're all getting dressed, and I'm getting, you know, we're getting Adam dressed, and Deanna's getting ready, and we're doing our hair, and Tawa's in the mix, and she's usually the last one to Grand Entry, or even get to Grand Entry, because, you know, doing her mother thing with, you know, and there I was, fully dressed, just carrying my dance stick and my fan or whatever, and going to the grand entry with the other men to visit and joke and visit and have fun, and look back and there's Tawa still getting children ready, still, and there's the cooler, there's the chairs, there's, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute, something's wrong with this picture. And I think for me, that was my view of my male privilege, is that I get to go over there with the other males in our regalia, wearing animal parts and feathers and getting ready to grand entry. And so that was a real awakening for me, mm-hmm. you know, in male privilege, because that's one of the last things, the last tactics that we use to let go, because it's so ingrained. And for some of us, we just, like I shared just a few moments ago, we can't see the forest for the trees with that, because it's right there. But when we understand it, and we're first learning it, and then we're put in the same situation, we just, creatures of habit, we just keep doing it until we get held accountable with it, or we're open to do something different. And that is me helping, me getting the chairs there, me braiding the hair, also me, you know, right there with Tawa, getting the children ready to powwow or to go dance.
So when we're talking about male privilege, one of those tactics are treating her like a servant, which you have basically just described.
Yes, yes, and there's many examples, and everyone, there's one size doesn't fit all here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of variance in how we use it. It can be on a continuum where it can be very used in every area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, treating her like a servant, or making all the decisions is another example in a relationship, and acts like a king of a castle, you know, that. And not only that, but we define our roles as men, and we also define her roles.
All foreign concepts to our original teachings.
Oh, yes. Oh, my first awakening to that was, we were in Sisseton, and one of my first teachers in the area of Wiwamachi and sun dancing, and there was men dancers, and we had our side of the sequestered place to camp in our teepees, and then there was the women's side, and there was an issue with the women dancers that they had, and they were asking Gilbert Gill that, what do we do? And he simply said, I don't wear a dress. I don't have any input on that issue because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the women have to sort through that issue. You know, and that was, when I first seen that, it made sense, but it sounded foreign.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It sounded foreign because that's not what I heard. I heard men telling the women what to do in all areas. And especially when it came to culture, because there was a lot of male privilege that tainted our culture in defining roles. And you said it best when it's so foreign, because it was so distinct and so a part of our culture that there was separate, and that we even had different ways of speaking our language. There's a feminine,
mm-hmm.
and a masculine way of talking. You know, so there's a whole teaching, and then there's a whole way to, in one, and they complemented each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there, at one time in our culture, we had our ducks in a row pretty good, Donna, is what my belief is. Of course, mm-hmm. it wasn't a utopia, but
right.
we had our ducks in a row, and male privilege was really foreign to us.
And what you were just talking about with culture is actually a very often used tactic. Cultural abuse.
Yes.
You were talking about misinterpreting culture to prove male superiority or female submission. And so kind of twisting that all up, and which from our original teachings, and then having contact with European ways of life,
mm-hmm.
and then that coming together and kind of getting it all twisted up. And so then we end up with
it's a real distorted,
there you go,
you know, view of and to make, you know, to make the situation more distorted is we have fragments of different, you know, life areas of our culture as it is through the colonization of being put on reservations, boarding schools. We have a whole generation of our ancestors who, that's where a lot of them were. And so there was a lot of culture that's lost. There's a lot of songs and ceremonies that were lost. And so it's fragmented. But what we do have and what we were able to keep, it's very cherished. And it's very cherished. And that's a kind of a healthier way to look at that, Donna. But, you know, the real distorted way is like what you just said. It becomes a mechanism to control our partner.
Right.
You know, through cultural abuse, spiritual abuse. And I see the same thing with our non-Indian relatives. You know, I've seen our non-Indian relatives use the Bible and scripture to continue and twist it and distort it to feed that male privilege. You know, so it's I've seen it in that area as well. And so, you know, to expound on cultural abuse a bit more, Donna, there's, you know, comparing our Indianness, being more Indian, then, you know, that divide and conquer that it took to colonize us, and then we as Indians still doing that, you know, and just feeding into that divide and conquer.
Internalized oppression.
You bet. And so when we get into that, comparing that I'm more Indian than you, or I know more than you, or you know, to use it in that manner, and to misinterpret culture to prove, you know, what we talked about earlier, you know, male superiority and female submission, and buying into that blood quantum, you know, that is another piece of, as a result of being on put on reservations, that, you know, that's what was forced on us. And then using that to say I'm more Indian than you because I'm 4'4", or I'm all Oglala, or I'm all Isanti, or I'm all whatever, Ihonktawa. Because look at my enrollment card, see? 4'4". You know, and I grew up like that, listening to that, and putting others down, you know, when we do that. Even if we're just, I think even just saying that, and then let alone having brown skin or not having as much brown skin, you know, being visual people, and we see someone, you know, and they're not brown and dark haired and dark eyed, then they're less Indian. So I, you know, so it's there very strong, and that's a real strong mechanism we use to use cultural abuse.
And that just leads us right into emotional abuse.
You know, I think that's probably the most used tactic, and because and yet it's the most hardest one to heal from, because with the bruise or, you know, a black eye, we can, you know, we can see the bruise go away, we can see the marks disappear, and then, you know, and as time goes on, then time has a way of healing, and so forth. But with emotional abuse, that scar is there, and we don't see it, but it has the same weight, you know, and it's very powerful, and it's because that it doesn't, even the word, even feelings, you know, emotions or feelings, it's energy, and we are so, and that's another area that we really need to grow, and a lot of us are not. I mean, a lot of our emotional growth is real stunted. You know, that's an area that I really encourage the men I work with to, that's an area we really need to work on. You know, to, I mean, it's in our language, you know, to, and you know, the whole belief and discipline of being aware of our emotions, you know, to deny any part of that is to deny our humanness. You know, so because it's so distorted and when we use emotional abuse, it's, you know, when we're put down, you know, enough times, you know, then we're going to, you know, there's so much irony to this, Donna, that I can remember as a boy growing up and feeling emotional abuse from my father, and then thinking to myself, I'm not going to do that. It hurts. And then as I internalize that, you know, make it about me, and then here I go and do exactly what was done to me, even though I can remember saying over and over again, I'm not going to do that. It's that, you know, it's that, it's like a damned if you do and damned if you don't when you're processing some of this stuff.
Right. And so when we're talking about the men's re-education program, which is for batterers, many who attend this program, which is a part of, sponsored by the Women's Lodge, the domestic violence shelter here in Lake Andes, many are court ordered, but it is voluntary. If you're listening out there, you want to learn more about these things that Rich is talking to. We're visiting with Richard Milda tonight, who is a co-facilitator of the men's re-education group. You're certainly welcome to contact. You can talk to Lynn at 487-7130. And again, that's Lynn, who is Richard's co-facilitator. And you can talk to her at 487-7130. I'm Donna Hawkins. This is Dakota Talk Radio. And we are live from Lake Andes, South Dakota. And tonight we're visiting with Richard Milda. And we're talking about tactics of battering, various behaviors that are used in a relationship between, how do you say that relationship? It's between two
people who are intimate.
Intimate relationship.
Yeah.
Between two people, and when one is being abusive, when one is a batterer. And so we're talking about different tactics that are being used within that violent relationship. And we've talked about male privilege. We've talked about cultural abuse. We were just visiting about emotional abuse, which encompasses so much.
It does, Donna. And, you know, it's not just put-downs. It's making her feel bad about herself, calling her names, making her think she's crazy.
Making her think she's crazy. That's big.
Oh, I grew up, I mean, I in my growth and my the behaviors I was changing, I call that crazy making,
mm-hmm.
You know, and playing the mind games, you know, and I think a big piece of that is, you know, on a continuum, a more harsher word that we use to describe a behavior is humiliation,
mm-hmm.
To humiliate her, and it can get really ugly and very misogynistic, in that word means is to hate. And the feminine,
mm-hmm.
You know, misogyny is a hatred towards women,
mm-hmm.
And some of the humiliation can be that horrific that I've seen working in this field of behaviors, and making her feel guilty is another one of emotional abuse, you know, making it feel like it's her fault, you know, and these are behaviors that are very complex. It doesn't matter if you're extremely educated, can really talk good, and have degrees, you know. And I've seen people, uneducated, come from very economic stressed environments, mm-hmm. And still use the same tactics in a very complex way.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of thinking, Donna, when we talk about these tactics, are very... they require higher thinking,
mm-hmm.
You know, to think about using them, when to use them, and what area, and how it's going to affect her, what do I get, and how it's going to affect others that see our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So male privilege, cultural abuse, and emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And which leads right into another tactic is isolation. We don't want the outside to see us behave that way. And I always call it that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is this figure that was, you know, he drank this potion and he was this doctor, and then he turned into this really monster kind of guy because of this. And that's literally what it is, you know, in the home, you know, we're behaving violently with a lot of emotional abuse and put downs to get our way, and very immature, very childish behavior, very hurtful. And when we're out in public, that's something that no one sees, you know, or very few people see.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they see it, we just left emotional abuse, you know, when we see that behavior, it's what's the, a lot of the thinking goes, what did she do?
Right.
What did she do to deserve that? When the question is, why is he doing that? Why is he choosing to behave that way?
And why is he allowed to do it?
Exactly. So, which is really important for me to say, that what I do is 100% my choice, regardless of what she does. She doesn't make me do anything. You know, that's a real immature way to think. What makes me do what I do is my thoughts, my thinking, my actions, my words. So, you know, that's no one's, you know, those are my choices and my thinking behind those choices, my belief. And so when we're out, and I used to really, I used to really not like it when people would come up to me and say, "Guy, your dad is so nice and generous, and holy cow, he just paid our way to, so our whole family can go to the movies. We went to the drive-in, and you know, and your dad paid our way, you know." And I'm sitting there, and it's really, when I was processing this, Donna, you know, I was part of me goes, "God, I hate it when people say that." Then as time kind of went on after it was said to me, a little part of me felt good about it too. So it was kind of like mixed feelings about it. And there's a lot of that kind of processing.
For the better.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It made me kind of feel, oh, I'm looked at that way, that my dad's a good guy. But at home, he's not. You know, he's beating the hell out of our mom and beating us.
Mm-hmm.
When he's angry, he's choosing to do that, mm-hmm, as a way to deal with
it. That's exactly why it's so difficult for people to look at those in the community who are very high profile. It might be easier to accept it when he's not the mayor or he's not the councilman or what have you. It might be easier to accept that because we don't want to believe that our leaders behave badly. But it's so, what you're saying is so vital for people to understand that there are two faces to a batterer. Exactly what you're saying. There's private man and there's the public man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mm-hmm, sometimes it's not kept apart either. I mean, many times that battering happens in public.
I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and it was not an uncommon thing, Donna. That kind of behavior was out in the open, you know, even into the 80s. And depending on the person's, when we grow up in violent communities where there's drinking and violence and fighting and murders and stabbings and, you know, and ways to...
Which identifies most of our communities in this country.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's getting more violent,
mm-hmm,
you know, and the value of life is getting less and less and less. And so when we have those kind of environments, Donna, and we view and believe power is violence, you know, and then we that's when we let that those kind of behaviors continue, or to not say nothing and not get involved.
Well, let me pose this to you, Richard. In terms of using that kind of terminology together, power and control,
mm-hmm,
for us as Native people, power has a whole different meaning to it, a whole different connotation to it, because when something is powerful, usually we don't think in terms of necessarily that negative. So when we're talking about power and control, in what you said about...
What I've heard, Donna, is that some of my teachers who come from the cultural arena, mm-hmm, where I'm learning our culture, our Dakota culture, is that power was, I heard it best described, it's Wakan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people say Wakan means sacred. Well, it means more than that. A lot of our words that we have in our vocabulary, in our language, could be a paragraph long,
mm-hmm,
you know, and sacred is just a piece of what Wakan means. It also means mystery, and also means it has a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if an officer comes to me, or, you know, and if I know that officer and he's on duty, I would point to his badge and say, that badge is Wakan.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of power, a lot of authority. You know, there's a lot of things that are involved that could alter someone's life because of that badge you're wearing. So that has a lot, that's Wakan, that has a lot of power. And that's more of a cultural viewpoint of what power is. Even though I know people who have that teaching, Donna, who are language speakers, and they don't know very much English, they're still doing the same behaviors. They're still using, violence is used to get power and control. They may not view it as, you know, in the same context.
Right.
It's about getting control.
Right.
And that's why that control piece needs to be in there when working with Indian people, because that's what we're trying to do, get our way.
And so this is this a discussion that you have in looking at what that means, power and control, when you're in your groups?
Oh, absolutely. We, you know, and what it means to, one size doesn't fit all here. I mean, it varies from person to person on a continuum of what we, how we used isolations. And you know, I really liked it in class we had, I think it was like 3 weeks ago here, Donna, that I really liked it that as we were going through these tactics, it was about this, it was about the third one, you know, like we're going through here, we were talking about isolation, especially when I said, you know, a main component in using isolation, we use jealousy as a means to justify our actions of isolation. And when I said that, and then I was going around the room and asking, what do you think so far? You know, and some said, well, I didn't even know I was abusive. I didn't even look at myself as a batter using these tactics. I see that, you know, I am, even though I don't hit. And some have said that. And the one I like is when this person said, women do that too. And I thought, there we go. Now we're cooking. Okay, now he's thinking. And the reality is that's true. But the intent is different. You know, the intent is different. And sometimes it's the same, but it's a different, there's a difference to it. Because women do it, like we said last week, or the last time we were talking, Donna, there's several types of violence. There's a peer batterer's control and power and to humiliate. And then there's that retaliation. A lot of times women will, you know, that have told me working, you know, through these tactics is that it's a retaliation piece, you know. And a lot of women's violence is retaliatory. And so, which has a different intent. It's meaning it's a different reason. Being used in a different way.
And usually that reasoning, well, maybe not usually is the a real good term to use, but often when a woman retaliates with violence, it's in self-defense.
Self-defense, self-preservation, you know, that's what it is. To work her way out of being put down as a means of getting her sense of self back. It's a very human thing to do. When we're in retaliation from any gender, I would say. So, you know, as we talk about isolation, it's limiting her from her relatives, from other female friends, definitely from other males.
Right.
You know, or anyone who's healthy enough to say, you know, you don't need to live like this. You know, you don't. And this is not your fault.
And oftentimes it's from his relatives as well. I mean, the isolation gets so severe in some instances that, I mean, she's not allowed to leave the house. She has to produce where she's at every minute. If she goes someplace, not allowed to use the phone. It can be very, very severe. Like you said, there's degrees of that isolation.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, as we talk about these, Donna, I just think it gives me hope, because if we look at our culture, you know, like I said, we had our ducks in a row, people. If I was to marry, say I was to marry you.
Okay. No, just kidding, Tawa.
And there was two places of choice to live, because we never married in our own Teoshpa'e. We never did. We never married within our clan.
Oh, yes, yes. In the past.
In the past. in the fear we might marry a relative, because we knew the probability of having children with delayed learning or disabilities was probable the closer we got mm-hmm. to our gene pool. Mm-hmm. And so we always married outside our Teoshpa'e with a different band. And talk about isolation has a means to not do in our culture. The male, when we got married, we wouldn't move to my relatives. We would move to her relatives. Mm-hmm. And we had songs that sang and celebrated that a father would sit and sing as they're moving to her relative, saying, "I'm giving you my son," and singing these songs to announce he's coming to live amongst you. You know, because we knew as human beings, if we were to have a disagreement, I have all my brothers and all my sisters that are going to side with me and say, "What is the matter with you?" mm-hmm. And make her feel even more isolated.
Right, and that's real common. It happens so often that an abusive situation, that when the woman not only deals with her intimate partner, but with the whole family, and not just the immediate family, of course, but the whole Teoshpa'e many times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have teachings, we have stories, songs that tell us, that teach us how to behave, which I want to talk about. Another tactic is intimidation. Mm-hmm. We have teachings that our men would be, you know, the word compassionate and gentle when talking to the opposite sex, because we did that for several reasons, because we knew that in our culture, women were sacred. Mm-hmm. They were life givers and they birthed our children. Our, mm-hmm. our ceremonies, our culture is matriarchal. It's feminine for a reason. And most cultures at one time I've read were all matriarchal.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so it must be a true. So to use intimidation and not be gentle and compassionate towards women, it's, you know, was our cultural way. Mm-hmm. You know, but to use intimidation, you know, to use our, I like it how Georgia says our mean mugs, or, you know, to give harsh looks to control. Mm-hmm. And that's all we got to do. As I was growing up, I had men I admired, heroes. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Kenneth. And man, he could dance, he could powwow, he worked hard. He always had a nice truck. He played hard. He played sports, you know. And he was married to my niece. In English way, she would be my first cousin mm-hmm. from my mother's brother. So that, and Crow, that makes her my niece, even though she's 10 years older than me. Mm-hmm. But I remember as he was courting her and they were, you know, and as he came into our life, because he, you know, made relation with her, and I really watched him, and he drank responsibly. Back then it seemed responsibly, but he played and worked hard, and he mm-hmm. danced hard, and he fought hard. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember Kenneth,
ideal man in your eyes.
Oh, I thought he was, that's uh-huh. how I want to be. That was my model. I remember it was a big deal when they went out drinking, and the wives would say that us younger males would go with them, so they'd be not so crazy. We'd sit in the back of the truck, and they would have us try to break the beer six-pack holders, and who could break mm-hmm. the most, and they would win $5, and we had fun like that. Anyway, I remember I was the last one to get dropped off, and Kenneth knew, you know, because I always wanted to powwow with him, and I always wanted to dance and follow him and his brother, you know. He was just this real muscle guy, and that was so cool, because being physically strong, and I used to believe that was power, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. even though I was raised otherwise.
Right.
And so I remember him saying to me, "Donna, Richard, you're getting to that age where you're gonna probably want to date someone. You're getting older." And he said, "You know what? Hit her just once. But damn it, don't hit her anymore. Just once. That's all you gotta do." You know. And I sat there and kind of awe, and at the same time wanting more information, because that's, you know, what he was telling me is what nationally has been reported by women that, you know, we're talking about tactics here to control women, and that 1-2% is physical abuse, mm-hmm. as a means to control and get control of our partners, our intimate partners. The other 98-99% is the tactics. So all I have to do was be intimidating,
right?
Because the foundation was laid, and we didn't know this stuff.
And that's the reason that the batterers re-education programs were developed, is to look at those behaviors, identify those violent behaviors, and not only just the hitting and the pushing and the kicking and the biting and the slapping and the hollering, that's a big one too.
Yeah.
But to look at all these different kinds of tactics that are used in an abusive relationship by the batterer, and most of them really cannot be readily identified by someone who's not outside of the relationship. They cannot be identified by someone who is outside of that relationship. And that's why they can be so effective.
Yes.
The intimidation, the cultural abuse, the isolation, and of course the use of male privilege. So we've talked about, and there's so much involved with the intimidation too, but we've identified 5 tactics used by batterers mm-hmm. tonight. And this is a conversation that is ongoing. And we know this is a lot of information for people to take in and to process and to think about and to understand, because, you know, some of our listeners out there, I'm sure, are saying, what, cultural abuse? Wow. You know, there's no cultural abuse when that's a major tactic used
by
batterers. So what we're going to do is, let's go ahead and we're going to wrap up tonight with this program. And next week, we're going to pick up again on the other tactics that are used, because we still need to talk about minimizing, lying, and blaming, using children is such a widely used tactic by a batterer, economic abuse, coercion, and threats that are used by the batterer, and also ritual abuse.
Right. One thing I want to make a closing statement on the topic, I mean, the tactics that we talked about, and this last one of intimidation, Donna, therein lies the gender difference, because it's fear. I am taught, because I was born male, growing up, I was taught not to fear. Don't be afraid. Get on that horse. Get back on. Break through that tackle. Work through that pain. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, conditioned as a boy not to fear. If I'm afraid, you know, I get taunted on the playground as a grade schooler. You know, you sissy,
right.
You wussy,
mm-hmm.
you faggot. You know, you little girl. You know, those kind of things.
All the bullying that happens on the playground.
That conditioned me not to fear. So I am. And that's not a healthy way to be,
mm-hmm.
but that's what I've experienced. And me using it, and you, as I think our women relatives are brought to understand that more, even though they're faced with it in a negative way, to acknowledge that fear, and that fear is real. But we have such a distorted view of fear. I mean, I see these stickers, no
You're
fear.
Talking, we as
women.
Men.
And women,
right?
There's the gender. Therein lies the gender difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the number one reason why women won't leave is what I've read is the fear. It's the fear of the what their children will feel. It's the fear of their lives. It's the fear of, you know, being out. It fear is number one,
mm-hmm.
and we have such a distorted view. We don't understand that. You know, I don't fear going to my car that I'm going to get raped,
right?
In an empty parking lot, because I'm male, or going in into an empty hotel room alone, you know.
I mean, and many of us women who may not have someone in their household all the time, A lot of times, first thing you go do is you go in and look in the shower, pull a shower curtain aside, look behind the doors, look in the closets.
Under the bed.
Look under the bed and make sure that the house is safe
mm-hmm.
and that there's nobody else in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a everyday kind of happening for women.
I don't think like that. It's not in my hard drive.
It's not the in motherboard's your male the same. Hard drive.
Right. I mean, the motherboard might be the same, but the wiring's a little different.
Right.
The electricity flows a little differently.
Right. And society has allowed this kind of conditioning to happen and promotes it.
Yes. Well, mm-hmm. like I was going to say earlier, I remember seeing those No Fear bumper stickers still. We're taught not to fear, no fear.
Oh, right, right.
You know, and the t-shirt apparel and you know, with the export stuff. The bravery, you know, kind of.
Right. And a natural, well, maybe that might not be the right word to use either, but fear doesn't have to be harmful.
It's not a negative thing.
It's not a negative thing.
I've heard very brave men say, I was very afraid what I was doing. And I am too when I'd done something and that someone asked me, what were you thinking? I was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid when I was doing it, but I was doing it. The bravery comes after you've done.
Well, we talked about that last time.
Yes.
That's so good to say.
Yes.
You know, to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So there in intimidation lies the gender difference
mm-hmm.
of this whole stuff we're re-educating from, Donna.
And we'll be talking more about intimidation because it is so commonly used and as we move through our program. So because there's so many tactics, we're going to continue with this conversation for our next program and continue identifying what those tactics are. And I would like to, is there a parting word you have for us tonight, Richard?
On the topic, on what we're discussing and what I'm sharing, you know, we're just skimming the surface on this. There's still the feelings that are involved, there's still the intent behind these actions and behaviors, and there's the belief system
mm-hmm.
behind that drives, you know, and so there's a surface belief, there's a core belief, you know, and there's excuses why we do these things, we have excuses, you know, that are all involved. So what we're talking about is we're just skimming the surface,
mm-hmm.
Donna.
Just to identify what those tactics are by naming them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the behaviors, there's a lot more behaviors behind
right.
them. And so, you know, but to the listening audience on a personal view, to share something personal, as I became aware of these and as I seen some of these I didn't realize, for example, my male privilege I was sharing earlier, my own personal male privilege, you know, some of these are, we're such creatures of habit that we're not, because our view is so distorted and we're not communicating well, we're not in touch with our wide scope of the feelings we have as human being, as male, as Indian male, that to be brought aware was was a major step, accepting that and then making myself accountable
mm-hmm.
was a real big piece of my okay, I need to change this behavior. And so it's a process because some, you know, Donna, when I first heard people talk like this, I got it, I understood it, I could spell the word. When it came time in a time of stress or a time of when I'm, it's like sewing gravy. Where did it go? You know, it just left me
mm-hmm.
when I was in that same situation. So
in trying to change your behaviors
yeah.
and your choices that you made in your response in a particular situation.
Absolutely, it takes
time. And
that's
time. What we're talking about.
Yes, yes.
Making those choices. So I'm sure our listeners are out there. Really thinking about some of the things that, hopefully all of the things that we've talked about tonight. And I want to say Wopida to you for sharing your personal stories with us, because that's not necessarily a very easy thing to do, but it's those kinds of things that sometimes make the most impact on us?
Well, because I made the personal connections to make it make sense for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies our own personal growth and change when
right.
we've made those personal connections.
Okay. So we have been talking with Richard Milda, who is co-facilitator for the Men's Re-Education Program, a program for men who batter. And this program is sponsored by the Women's Lodge, the Domestic Violence Shelter in Lake Andy, South Dakota. And I'm Donna Hawkes, and may you be safe, and may you be healthy.
Hey, hey, oh.